Welcome to Supersized Science, where you feature research and discoveries nationwide, enabled by advanced computing technology and expertise at the Texas Advanced Computing Center of the University of Texas at Austin. I'm Jorge Salazar, science writer at TAC, with a special podcast as we prepare for the Supercomputing Conference, SC24, mid-November in Atlanta, Georgia. Something big is coming for science. The largest, by far, academic supercomputer in the U.S., called Horizon. As part of the U.S. National Science Foundation Leadership Class Computing Facility, a project awarded to TAC. In July of 2024, the NSF announced that TAC will begin construction of the NSF Leadership Class Computing Facility, which will be a distributed facility providing unique computational and data analytics capabilities, as well as critical software and services for the nation's science and engineering research community, to enable discoveries that would not be possible otherwise. TAC will build and operate the Horizon supercomputer as part of the NSF LCCF, which when it comes online in 2026 will be a supercomputer 10 times as powerful as the current number one academic supercomputer in the U.S., Frontera, which is also operated by TAC. Here to discuss the NSF LCCF and Horizon supercomputer is Dan Stanzione, Executive Director of TAC and Principal Investigator of the NSF LCCF. Dr. Stanzione, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
What are the most important aspects of the LCCF that you'd like the public to know about?
The National Science Foundation's invested in computing in support of science and engineering for about 40 years now through a variety of programs. But this one is really a big change in how they're funding computing, and it is creating a long-term facility in the same way that they created facilities for big particle accelerators like the Large Hadron Collider and big telescopes that run for decades and other giant scientific instruments, and putting computing and data analysis and AI on sort of a par with all those other things. We've known for a long time, and the 40 years of investment shows, that computing is really the key sort of universal scientific instrument for all fields of science, whether it's for simulation, for analyzing large data sets from experiments, now increasingly for building models via AI. Computing is the universal tool for all of that. And this means that there'll be a somewhat sustained large-scale investment in computing that the science and engineering communities can count on to get the work done. That, I think, is the most significant part of it. It will, of course, mean we'll have bigger machines than we ever have before, but that's sort of true in all big supercomputing investments, right? That the machines keep getting bigger as time goes on. But these will be big and somewhat persistent versus the way they funded things in the past. So it's the opportunity not to just have machines, but to have the machines and the services and the workforce in a consistent partnership with the scientific community to make sure we get the most for our investment in science and engineering.
Could you speak to the inspiration for LCCF? One of the inspirations that you've talked about is investigating nature and time steps from picoseconds, maybe, to interactions of phonons with crystal structure, down to gigayears, talking about cosmology. Talk about this inspiration.
That's something that has struck me in looking at what people run on the supercomputers that we have and that we've been providing for so many years here, is the incredible range of problems that people run on them. And it really is from the largest things you can imagine to the smallest things you can imagine, right? If you look at the length scales and the time scales, right, people doing, you know, as you mentioned, phonon-phonon interaction, or, you know, building new materials design from the atoms up, right, to get particular properties out of materials. Yeah, you're typically looking at femtoseconds or picoseconds in your simulation time steps and length scales of angstroms, you know, widths of, you know, a few atoms wide or even smaller. And then we have people simulating the formation of the universe, right, where you're talking about megaparsecs, things that are quintillions of miles across, you know, and over timescales of billions of years. And there aren't a lot of instruments that let you work, you know, across those scales, that huge, you know, 10 to the 30th variance from the smallest things you can do to the biggest things you can do. And it's really every physical phenomena in the universe, right, from the fundamentals of how matter forms at the atomic and subatomic levels and the quantum levels to how the galaxies spin and orbit and collide with each other and stars form and all of these, you know, more basic questions and almost every engineering problem in between, right? From concrete things like building more efficient aircraft or more efficient vehicles to the more abstract digital things like better AI intelligence, right? So pick a problem that we need to solve. Environmental, biological, medicine, healthcare, materials, anything. We need computation to do it. So we really are building what I hope will be sort of the very large scale Swiss Army knife of science.
People listening, first listening to this podcast, might be attending the annual supercomputing conference SE24 in mid-November. What is the status of the project right now and what's coming soon?
Well, again, the construction phase of the project's underway, and that started in July. And some of that is physical brick and mortar type construction, and some of it is actual ordering and procuring the systems and getting them up and running and things like that. The whole construction process will take on the order of two and a half years to get done. So we're in the early stages. The main thing that is under construction right now is the new data center that will actually house the facility. It's outgrowing the facilities that we have at TAC. We max out at around 9 megawatts for our on-site data center. So there's a new data center that'll have initially 15, but potentially 20 megawatts of capacity for this facility in Round Rock, Texas. And we're building it with a co-location vendor, Sabey Data Centers, who we're working with to build this. And so they've built out the main building that is the data center, but the inside is just a big sort of open concrete space at the moment that we have to customize with all the piping we need to bring in chilled water and all the circuits we need for these super high density racks of computing that we're going to be putting in and racks of storage that we're going to be putting in. So that process is going to take a little over a year. We're in November of 2024. It'll be by this time next year, the data center should be at a point where computers are being installed, you know, on the floor and things like that. We're running through the procurement process. Some of the pieces of the facility go in our current data center, like the archive systems and things like that. So those will start showing up in the spring of 2025. But the main computing system will be late in 2025 and early 2026 coming up. There's also some distributed pieces around the country that are being built out in Pittsburgh, in Champaign-Urbana at the University of Illinois, in the San Diego Supercomputing Center, and in Atlanta with the Atlanta University Consortium. And those will also be coming online through the course of 2025 into early 2026. There's, you know, some staffing changes to be made, and there's a new visitor center being built that is, you know, physical construction. Those will probably take into 2026. But, you know, I think the first systems that people will see, the early access systems, the archive systems, those will all be sometime in the summer of 2025, so about 9 months from now.
I'm going to skip ahead to one question. Can we talk about Horizon a little bit? Some of the capabilities of Horizon. You mentioned AI earlier as far as some of the inspirations for the LCCF.
Yeah, so Horizon is the name of the first big supercomputer that will be part of the leadership facility. That's the one that will be here in Austin in the new facility. And we do have a number of different requirements around that system based on, you know, what we've seen running on supercomputers in the past and our need to scale them up and do bigger, higher resolution, more intense simulations, and now the newer needs for AI at massive scale. So it'll be a bit of a hybrid system. If you measure it in the traditional way we measure supercomputers with 64-bit floating point performance, so can we do math at very high precision with 64 bits representing each number? It's about a 400 petaflop machine, so it's an order of magnitude faster than our current leadership system, Frontera. That's about a 10x leap. If you look at the AI computations, where they're doing mostly deep learning with artificial neural networks, where we typically run at lower precisions, right? We'll use 16 or 8 bits for computing the connections between the neurons and those neural nets. And it's a much faster machine from that perspective, mostly GPU-based for that work. And the GPUs are increasingly tuned for these lower precision AI computations. So we'll be at, again, depending on the level of precision you want, 10 exaflops to 20 exaflops of precision for that. I think either way you measure, it will be one of the larger machines, certainly one of the larger sort of single supercomputer machines that are out there. By the traditional measure, I think we'll still be in the top 10 in the world when the machine comes online. But as an AI machine, I think we'll also be in the top 10 of the world for most benchmarks at the sort of 20 exaflops number. We're scaling other dimensions as well, the amount of I.O. you can do, right? How fast you can read and write data, how much data you can store. All of those are scaling up pretty significantly from our current machine, as balance is the name of the game to get, you know, throughput and productivity out of these machines. Yeah, so, but it'll be both the most cores of CPUs, traditional processors that we've ever had. We'll probably have around 1 million cores, you know, on the main machine. It's about twice as many as we have on Frontera, but the GPU growth will be very large. We'll have, you know, roughly 4,000 GPUs in the machine that'll draw most of the power and provide most of the high-end floating point performance. But, you know, it'll be a substantial scale up in sort of both dimensions.
Yeah, that's one of the top concerns for TAC. is power efficiency for Horizon. Could you talk a little bit about how that's achieved through what you're doing at the Sabey data center?
So part of the power efficiency is data center efficiency, right? And so, you know, we'll be doing all direct liquid cooling for the system. No sort of little makeup cooling, just because big racks of hot, warm metal will radiate into the room. But for the most part, we're running liquid directly across the chips at a pretty fast rate of speed to keep these individual chips and some of the individual GPU-CPU combination modules will draw 3,000 watts a piece, you know, in a few square inches. So we need to move liquid pretty quickly across those. And that raises our efficiency somewhat in terms of data center efficiency, although a lot of it is about the actual design of the circuits, right? And one reason some large-scale computation is moved to GPUs is they're more efficient in terms of the number of operations you can do per watt of power you can consume. Again, there's some trade-offs you make in doing that. So there's some problems that don't fit well where we still need the sort of traditional CPUs that use more power per operation because they're essentially more complex circuits, right? That go into actually doing those computations. And when you simplify them on GPUs, your power efficiency goes up, but the software is harder to construct. So there are some trade-offs. It just happens that AI fits so naturally into that model. It's been a huge success. If you look at overall, right, our Frontera system at peak power draws almost 6 megawatts to give us about 40 petaflops of double precision performance. Horizon will draw probably more like 9, 9.5 megawatts. So it's 1.5 times the power of Frontera, but it's, you know, 10 times the double precision floating point of Frontera. So in terms of the power we use per operation, we'll be 5 or 6 times better on Horizon than we currently are. And again, part of that is data center efficiency. Part of it is just the nature of the chips that we're using and the fact that, you know, over time, our circuits are getting more efficient. Just the demand for them has grown so much that the power continues to rise. Demand is growing faster than our efficiency is growing, in essence. Yeah.
The baseline that you talked about, like 10x, 100x for AI, I think we're referring to like Frontera. One question I wanted to get is kind of like your feelings about how Frontera is coming on its fifth year. It's starting to see the end of Frontera. We're starting to see the beginning. How does it feel to like see the beginning of LCCF? And this is a project that goes all the way back to 2017 with the NSF solicitation of Frontera, which is still the most powerful academic supercomputer in the U.S., considered to be a prototype for Horizon.
Yeah, all that is true, right? Yeah, Frontera was the... Well, the procurement that led to Frontera, and Frontera was the number 5 machine in the world when we deployed it in 2019. And like most of these, yeah, the procurement actually started 2 years before that in 2017. And in that competition, when we started competing for the machine, it was, you know, this machine would both be, you know, meet the challenges that the NSF community faces in computing now, but also serve as potentially a prototype or a model for looking at this longer term investment in the leadership facility. So we started sort of formally competing, you know, and making plans around the leadership facility in 2017. I will say the genesis of this at the National Science Foundation and throughout the academic community goes back at least more than a decade before that, to the early 2000s, when various people in the community started advocating for NSF to make more sustained investments in computing and larger scale investments in computing. And that when there's always a process of workshops and reports as it sort of percolates through government policy and becoming a reality. And a lot of people at NSF did a lot of work to get it into the schedule for the major facilities, which, you know, formally started with that 2017 solicitation. But for us, yeah, so, you know, we've put 7 years into the planning for this just to get to the point where we get awarded to start the construction phase, right? So it's a weird feeling. It's, you know, longer than I spent working on my dissertation. And nothing should take longer than that as a single project. But it's also very fulfilling to see the sort of evolution. You know, here at TAC, we did our first sort of really large-scale system, you know, moving beyond the sort of campus cluster range in about 2006 with the Ranger system, which I guess we started planning in 2005 timeframe, and, you know, it went into production, you know, was deployed in 2007. Full production was the start of 2008. On that machine, and watching things grow and evolve over the intervening 16 years, and Horizon and the leadership facility are sort of the culmination of that process. So on the one hand, it seems like an awfully long time. On the other hand, I think it shows how there is a a progression to the things that we do and how we've made progress, you know, over this, you know, long focus on doing things the right way and, you know, moving the gears of policy and government to sort of, you know, recognize these needs and then do something about fulfilling these needs and then to see it come to fruition. So it's a long and exhausting process, but it's also very rewarding. It's something that I think both I and a ton of people around TAC and the community have been working on really for decades to see this come to life. And so that part's been awfully fulfilling. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to go back to the past a little bit too here. I dug up a quote of a famous man once said, invention is an individual affair, but creating a product is a team game. He may have been referring to the industry side of it, and we're talking about the academic side here, but could you speak to the TAC team and maybe a little bit about the quote too, but the TAC team that helps scientists make the best use of the supercomputers here with the code, optimizing their code and also writing code to use the supercomputers better and also to make this, I guess, a leap, you know, to AI for scientists.
I definitely recognize the quote because it comes from my father when he was at Bell Labs. I think in the 1980s is when that was from, in the telephony part of the industry, right, building big telecommunication systems. But it is certainly true, right? I'm the PI because somebody has to be on the front page of the piece of paper that, you know, signs off for it. But it really is a team effort, right? This is not something that I've created or I've done. It's something that the several hundred people who work here at TAC have all contributed to. Again, now going back for the 20-some years that TAC has been in existence and people working in the community to provide large-scale computing systems to scientists and engineers going back to, you know, the start of the NSF Centers program in 1983. We've built on the work that many people have done to pave the way both technologically in designing and building the systems and the programming models and the numerical methods that we rely upon to do science computationally at scale from the transistor on forward, even before that, if you really look into it. And then here to build out the organization and the user support and our capability to design, deploy, operate large systems, train people to use them, make them effective. There's so many vendors we rely on. There's so many partners we rely on. There's so many contributions of open source software that we rely on. And then the work of, again, a huge team here that makes this happen. And yeah, on my own, I could talk about this. Without the team, we could never do it, right? And frankly, the institution that's behind us to drive this, it is a team sport, 100%.
The National Science Foundation is putting a huge investment in TAC for more than just a computer, right? Could you speak to the other things that LCCF, or more about the other things that LCCF is, education and outreach that will expand and inspire future scientists and engineers in the U.S. Working in data and computational science?
Yeah, there are a lot of parts of it. And going back to where we started, right, this is a distributed facility, right? And distributed means not just the machines, but the team that's doing it. So we have a lot of partners. You know, again, a lot of people at TAC and a lot of people beyond TAC. There'll be, you know, physically distributed hardware. You know, Horizon will be here. We'll have the primary storage and archive systems will be here. There will be pieces of hardware doing either mirroring data or looking into prototype next generation systems, even some small quantum test beds, looking at specific cases like how to do high throughput inferencing or how to do more interactive computing that'll sit at other sites around the country. Again, with the Pittsburgh Supercomputer Center, the National Center for Supercomputing Applications, the San Diego Supercomputing Center, and the Atlanta University Consortium all playing roles. The AUC in particular, led by Morehouse College, is really leaning into some of the workforce aspects, as are, although pieces of the education and outreach mission will be at every site, including Cornell was a partner for doing the virtual workshop piece of one of our online training approaches. Ohio State is part of the team for system software. There's some other universities that are part of, you know, building our initial applications. But leaning into the workforce piece, we're trying to do more of a range of things than we've ever done, partially because there's more resources, ranging from explaining why computation is important to science and therefore society for the general public, to K-12 engagement, to undergraduates, to graduate students and professionals using it. We just started a new internship program as part of the LCCF that will take people who would like to work in technology careers, but really from all walks of life, right? And we had veterans making career transitions. We have post-PhD people. We have people who've never been to college who are a part of that, you know, who just have sort of a passion to contribute to these sort of things, because we do need so many different kinds of skill sets to make this work. That's always one of the most rewarding aspects of it, is getting to work directly with students and see them, you know, see the lights go on and see them make discoveries. But yeah, we'll have, you know, fellowships that bring grad students working at institutions around the country here for part of the summer, and to spend the year sort of working with our team, but still staying in their home labs doing science, but making sure they're getting the most out of the machines that the LCCF provides. We'll have direct interns who work here on the facility itself at the undergraduate level. We'll have K-12 students who come for summer camps and things like that, you know, to be part of it. We have even a middle school program for sort of computational thinking and computational literacy. So we hope there'll be sort of something for everyone. We do see the facility as being, in fact, the facility to lead scientific computation in the country, which is more than the machine, right? It's the machine, it's the set of software and services around that machine, and it's the people to help you most effectively use that machine, and it's building the future workforce that can take full advantage of it.
The users of Horizon, what will Horizon be used for and who will use it?
So the users will be anybody doing unclassified research, mostly publicly funded, government-funded researchers, be they academics, labs, large facilities from around primarily the U.S., although there'll be partners who are working on U.S.-led projects from around the world who will also use the machine. You know, one of the fascinating things about these machines, right? We have a set of particular problems that we want to address in the first year that sort of drove the requirements for the machine based on past things. But the way we use these machines continues to evolve. And, you know, what we're going to discover with it, it's hard to predict at this point, right? For every new machine we've done, there's been, you know, new and interesting problems we didn't see coming. Some of the recent breakthroughs in AI were not things that were necessarily on the roadmap when we built the machines that did them. Computational health and medicine has grown so much in the last 25 years, right? If you'd asked me 25 years ago, right, I said physics, materials, chemistry, engineering, right? And increasingly it's health and even public health and pandemic support versus the more basic, you know, molecular dynamics and vaccine design and tumor modeling and things like that. We've moved pretty heavily into natural hazards. As I sit here talking to you today, we're running storm surge forecasts for a major hurricane that's looking to make landfall in the next couple of days. It's become a routine part of what we do. Severe storm forecasts, right? It's a lot more operational and near term than sort of the basic research we think about that happens on the machine. I know there will be a lot of users. Traditionally, by the time we go through one of these big machines, 10 to 15,000 people will have used it. Most of them affiliated with academia one way or another. It's usually the core users are grad students and postdocs. But there'll be some companies involved, there'll be some nonprofits involved, there'll undoubtedly be some government lab people involved. We're leaning in particularly to some of the other large investments in large facilities that NSF makes. The Ice Cube Neutrino Detector, the Gravitational Wave Observatory, LIGO, the Very Large Array Telescope and its successors, the Vera Rubin Telescope that's coming online, the James Webb Orbiting Telescope, you know, the one out in space. We expect all those workloads to be there. But there'll be a mix of people working on big instruments and sort of single investigators doing simulations about theories and ideas that they have in small labs. And my guess is there will be, in the end, thousands of users, and they will discover some things that I have no inkling about today.
Do you want to talk about, I framed it as kind of setting the table for Horizon. Talk about the systems launched in 2024, Stampede 3, Vista. Would you like to talk about Stampede 3 and Vista as we're kind of heading into SE24?
Sure. Yeah. So Frontera is our big system right now, but it's gotten a little bit long in the tooth, right, as we've been planning the LCCF. And, you know, it's still a super functional, super reliable system, but we built it in 2019, right? So it's a five-year-old computer and has all the baggage that comes with any five-year-old computer, whether it's a laptop or a giant supercomputer. Each processor ages at the exact same rate. So, you know, it's in its sixth year, and we've done a number of systems along the way to sort of, you know, it would be a big leap to move from Frontera in 2019 to Horizon at the end of 2025 without any sort of stepping stones in between. So we've built a number of other systems along the way, two of which we just did this year in Stampede 3 and Vista. One we did 2 years ago now in Lone Star 6, and each of them represent sort of potential technology paths forward, as well as individually very usable systems in their own right, right? Lone Star is our AMD-based system. We have AMD processors, test beds around AMD GPUs. It's also been our default NVIDIA GPU platform for the last couple of years for AI and machine learning style applications. Stampede 3 this year continues along a series of predecessor systems, as you might imagine, that have all been done with Intel and with Dell, and continues to be the latest Intel processors and Xeons, and has been a huge, yeah, Stampede 2 was a 2017 system that we retired as it got older this year, and Stampede 3 is sort of its linear evolution focused on the more traditional simulation workloads, the CPU-based workloads, and is still a super in-demand and useful machine. And then Vista we did almost purely with NVIDIA, right, using not just NVIDIA GPUs, but NVIDIA CPUs as well for the first time. And that's the most recent system we've done. So we have a sort of mid-scale system, and these are at the scale of 500 to 1,000 individual servers or nodes, whereas the big machines tend to be 7,000 or 8,000 of those nodes. But we have one with AMD, one with NVIDIA, one with Intel that not only provide us different focuses now, right, or different foci where some are more throughput-oriented, some are more CPU-oriented, some are more AI-oriented, but they also help us model the technology and software path going forward towards Horizon while still giving our users these sort of state-of-the-art capabilities, right? You know, we always have something aging and something new and something in deployment, you know, in the pipeline. Is just the nature of the game, as you know, these machines last 5, 6, maybe 7 years. And then the technology is so old that just doesn't make good power carbon sense to leave them running beyond that. So we've been able to learn a ton from these systems while also doing good science that will help inform the way Horizon's going to work.
Are there any final thoughts as we turn the corner on 2024 into 2025?
The start of the LCCF has been super exciting for us. And again, it's both the culmination of a very long process to get this far, but it's also a new beginning for us in a lot of ways. And as I've said a lot lately, though we've done excruciatingly detailed plans for what we're going to deploy, I think it was Eisenhower who said, no plan survives contact with the enemy. And in this case, the realities of the computing industry mean that products are going to change and roadmaps are going to change and market conditions are going to change. The demands of science are going to change, you know, as we move forward. And then even if we did everything we planned exactly for the next 2 years, once we get into operations, there'll be the next part of, you know, the next upgrade to the leadership facility where there's still a lot of challenges, a lot of things to solve. When does quantum play a role in something that we might do? How do we manage the increasingly voracious appetite for power, for AI applications and sustainability? We'll have no shortage of exciting challenges moving ahead. So it's both looking back, it's the culmination of a lot of work. Looking forward, it's the start of a new era and lots of exciting things still to do.
You've been listening to Dan Stanzione of TAC. Supersized Science is part of the Texas Podcast Network, the conversations changing the world brought to you by the University of Texas at Austin. The opinions expressed in this podcast represent the views of the host, not of the University of Texas at Austin. For the Texas Advanced Computing Center, I'm Jorge Salazar.